I'm Alma Fay, and I was born many years ago on October the 20th of 1922 at Eagle Creek, Oregon, which is a very small town, if you want to call it a town. It's kind of a wide spot in the road in Oregon. And I went to school in that little town. It was a two-room school. Throughout my first 8 grades, the primary grades. Thereafter, I attended high school in Estacada, Oregon, which is a town approximately 5 miles from Eagle Creek, and is a little larger area. And I graduated from there in May of 1939.
Where did you go to college?
I didn't go to college till after I was in the service. That was during World War II, and I first went to school at the University of Washington in Seattle in January of 1945, and I went there 2 years. And from there, I went to the University of Montana and at Missoula, and I attended school there and graduated from Montana in 1952. Or 51, I'm sorry, 1951.
What did you do in the Army? Were you in the Army?
Yes.
Where were you? Where were you stationed and what did you do? I
was stationed in the European Theater. We were in England. I was in the Army Air Force, and I was part of a B-17 bomber crew flying out of England.
How long were you there?
Well, I went there in late 1944. Mm-hmm. I believe it was either November or December of 1944. I flew 11 missions, and I was shot down on the 11th mission in January 1955. And I was behind the enemy lines in Holland until May of 45, when the troops liberated us.
Were you a prisoner at that time? Or
were no, we weren't prisoners. We were just staying with the underground. And they sheltered us and moved us from place to place in Holland and kind of kept us away from the Germans.
What did you do between 1939 and
1944? Oh, I just worked at various jobs. I went into the service in 42. Mm-hmm. So it had been between 1939 and 42.
What kind of job?
Oh, I think I start out with a working in what they called in those days a CCC camp, and spent I think a year or so there, and then just worked at odd jobs, and finally I went to work in a shipbuilding industry just right after the war, and I was in that right up till the war time, right up till I went in the service.
The shipbuilding.
Yes.
So after the war, you went to college, or did you go back to shipbuilding?
No, I went directly to school. Mm-hmm. Went to college. Mm-hmm. Well, I was discharged, I think, in December 15th, 1945, and I was in school in January 46.
Were you on the GI Bill?
Yes. Yes.
Why did you go to law? What was your undergrad first? What did you major in undergrad?
Well, initially when I went to school, when I went to the University of Washington, I was preparing to go into an engineering course, and I wanted aeronautical engineering. And that's why I selected the University of Washington. But then after a first semester or so, it became obvious that that wasn't my field. So I took some aptitude tests, and they decided that I should be either in political science or law or something in that area. So I selected law.
Were there any lawyers in your
No, we never had any lawyers in our family. As a matter of fact, we never had anyone that ever went to even beyond high school in our family. Mm-hmm. Still, I don't think we have very many of them that have. My brother and I are probably the only two that have.
What does your brother do?
He's a certified public accountant. Mm-hmm. He's with the Dillingham Corporation.
Do you have any other brothers and sisters?
I have one sister that works in Portland, Oregon.
Did your family encourage you to go to law school?
No, they didn't. It was just strictly on my own. I had never even thought of going into law school until I took the aptitude test. And after that, it just simply fell into place. When I was at the University of Washington, our dorm room was right across the hall from two freshmen that were in the University of Washington Law School. And when I saw how hard they had to study, I didn't want to become a lawyer. I didn't want to go to law school. But it just sort of fell in that way, and I don't know what actually motivated me. It was just the fact that was that's where I fell into.
Were you in Montana for law school?
Yes.
At Missoula? So you did your law school?
Yes.
Did you do the 3 years there?
Yes.
What did you do when you graduated from law school?
Oh, when I graduated from law school, I first went to California, and I was there for about 6 months and worked as an insurance adjuster. And I moved up to Portland, Oregon, and was also an insurance adjuster for a while in Portland. And then I went to work for a title company in Portland called Commonwealth Title Company. And I worked for them just over a year.
Why didn't you practice?
Well, it was difficult to get into law practice in those days in California as well as in Oregon. You always had that in the back of your mind, that's what you were going to do. But for one thing, of course, you had to take the bar exam. And I took the bar exam twice in Oregon before I was able to pass it. So that took a couple of years right there. So it takes time, and you have to work while you're doing it. So.
Did you have family at this time? Were you married?
No, no.
So you were alone?
Well, I was first married in 1952. Mm-hmm.
Is that before or after you came to Alaska?
That was before I came to Alaska, yeah.
Was that Kay Ritchie?
Yes.
She married in 52.
Yeah. She and I went to law school together, mm-hmm. and that's how we knew each other. She was also a lawyer. She graduated the same time I did. And she also took the Oregon bar at the same time I did.
Why didn't you two stay in Oregon?
Well, that's a good question. We had the opportunity to come to Alaska, and we did. The Commonwealth purchased the only title company that I know of that existed in Alaska, and it was here in Anchorage. So they needed someone to come up. And I volunteered to come up for a year. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got here.
What happened after the year?
Well, I'd finished a year. Well, I'd taken the bar exam here. I took the bar exam in November. We came up in January of 53, mm-hmm. last day of January, 30th day of January, 53. And we took the bar exam here in November of 53. And at that time, I was still working for the title company when I took the bar exam. And then in February of, I think it was February 15th of 1954, I purchased William H. Olson's law practice. He had been appointed to some post in the Interior Department. think he was a director for the Alaska division. And I purchased his law practice, so I went into practice, private practice, into his office. I just sort of took over. He had to leave quite quickly, and I just took over.
Was there a great demand? Were other people asking for his law practice, or how did you?
No. I don't think the law practice wasn't flourishing that well up here in those days. As a matter of fact, there just wasn't any large law business of any kind. The firms are very small, 2-3 man firms at the most. And you're doing a lot of collections, a lot of small work, deeds and contracts, real estate contracts, deeds, things that, you know, were just associated with a small economy, because it was a small economy at the time. At the time, everyone depended on the military, Fort Rich and Elmendorf were the prime employers. And other than that, except for the fishing industry, there just wasn't very much here.
What kind of practice did Bill Olson have?
I would categorize it as primarily a collection firm. He did a lot of collections I don't think he did much for local firms, but mainly outside firms he did collections for.
How did you determine the purchase price of the firm, or the purchase price of the firm?
He just said that he wanted that many dollars, and I paid him that many dollars. Mm-hmm. It was primarily books and his library, and which I still have some of. Primarily his library, his office equipment. This desk is one I purchased from him. Mm-hmm. And the file cabinets. That's primarily what established the purchase price.
So it wasn't so much the business as
No, we didn't even consider the business. I don't think he had anything really that amounted to anything except day-to-day work and the collections that you did day-to-day. I think he pretty well collected all of his receivables.
Mm-hmm. What was your wife doing at this time? What did she do when she
Kay worked for, she first worked for Helenthal and Cottas, mm-hmm, as a, I don't know what, how you'd categorize her, as an intern, probably be the best term. She was kind of a legal assistant to them.
Did you ever work together?
No, mm-hmm, we never did.
Was it hard to get law jobs up here, was it?
I would say yes. Seemed to me like it was. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't that much legal business in Anchorage at that time. But there are always job openings like the United States Attorney's Office, United States Commissioner. The state had the Attorney General's Office. There were those jobs that were always opening up. Yeah, they were all political, all those were.
Did you get involved in politics at all?
No, not really. I didn't get that far in politics. I ran for the legislature, I think, once or twice, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And I think I ran for the old city council once or twice. That was all.
That's still quite a bit. Why did you run for office?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it was just sort of the thing to do in those days. You know, you didn't really have that much law practice to attend to. Although we seemed to be busy all the time, but we always seemed to have time for other activities. And it was just a matter of sort of promoting your own law practice, really.
Mm-hmm. Was it a way of getting clients or becoming known?
That's what it was. I think that's mainly what it was.
Did you have clients that would come to you and say, you know, I thought you were running for this, or how did you know that
Well, it isn't that so much. It's the fact that, you know, when you couldn't advertise in those days. And, of course, you advertised that you were running for this office or that office, and that helped by them just knowing you, knowing who you were.
And that you were alive?
Yeah.
Did Kay Ritchie run for public office at
all? No, I don't think she ever did. She eventually worked in the U.S. Attorney's Office. Mm-hmm. I forget how long she worked there, but she worked there for a while.
Was it hard, both of you being lawyers? Were there any others?
There were others here. Stan and Jan Wilson were already here.
Mm-hmm. They worked together, though?
They worked together, yes. They both practiced together, which is rather unusual. Those are the only two that I know of that were there at the time.
Yeah. It wasn't hard, both of you being in the same line of work?
Oh, no, not really. She was involved in totally different type of work than I was involved in.
If she was in the DA's office, she'd be doing criminal work, right?
Right, that's what she did.
And you had a strictly civil...
Most of mine was a civil practice. I've been almost all the time involved in civil practice. Mm-hmm. I've had a few criminal cases, but not very many.
Yeah. So you took over Bill Olson's practice in 54. Then what? How long did you...
That's what I've been doing ever since then.
Uh-huh. Has it been difficult? Have you seen trends in the practice at all?
Oh, there's been tremendous trends, and I don't think you'd ever see trends like this anywhere else. Although I know that they have had changes in all of the U.S. states. Mm-hmm. I get bulletins constantly from Oregon, where I'm still a member of the bar, in Montana, where I'm a member of the bar. And they have changes, too, but there was nothing like this. We were in territorial status when I came up here, and then went from that to state. Of course, that was quite a change right there.
Did it change your practice?
Well, not really at first. I think it did later on. But
how?
Well, I think that the volume of legal business increased after statehood. Mm-hmm. Substantially, actually. It was quite a change from territorial to statehood.
Were the types of things you were handling different? Or just the amount?
Probably the volume would be more than the types and the amounts.
Were there different types of practitioners up here? Were there different kind of people practicing before statehood and after statehood?
No, how do you mean? Did they...
Did the practice get more aggressive?
Oh, yes, it did that.
You see different kinds of partnerships forming?
Well, I think you see there was quite a trend to, after statehood, to acquire more lawyers, and the firms became larger. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean? I think that's what happened. Eventually it came into the practice that you see today, where most people are involved in large firms. You see very few people in private practice, at least one person office.
This, you're a solo practitioner?
Yes.
Is it harder for the solo practitioner?
Well, in some ways it is, I'm sure. In other ways it's probably easier. But it's harder in that you don't have the freedom that you would have with a partner or with two or three partners or being a member of the firm. I've never been a member of a firm, so I don't know, but it seems to me that you can have someone else covering for you when you're doing other things, either vacationing or involved in other work.
Have you ever thought about joining a firm or having a partner? Have you ever had a partner?
I've had a partner, but I've never joined a firm.
Why don't you have one anymore, or why do you prefer solo practice?
Well... I had engaged a young lawyer to come in and work for me, and I think he came in 1974. or 75. And eventually he was going to take over the practice. I was just going to sort of retire and do whatever I wanted to do. But it just didn't work out, and I guess I just never tried it again is all. And I suppose if I ever do retire, it'll just be retiring. That's it, period.
And your clients will just go to other...
Yes. I'll just phase it out over a period of time.
Are you thinking about doing that? Or you...
Well, not seriously yet, but we have sold this building now, so I will be out of this building probably this next year. So it just depends on what I want to do after that.
Is there any kind of communication between solo practitioners in Anchorage? Was there in the early years, and is there now?
Always has been. I don't think that's changed very much. I think there's always been a lot of communication between lawyers. Mm-hmm. You sit and talk to lawyers constantly, whether it's just while you're waiting for a court hearing, or whether you're having a drink with them, or whatever you're doing. There's always a communication.
Has it gotten more or less?
Oh, I don't think it's more or less, either one. I think it just, yeah. I think it is. I think you just, there are a lot more now, a lot more practitioners now than there were. And maybe the opportunity to talk to people is greater now than it was then. But it seems like we always had that opportunity to talk to one another.
Did you do any personal injury work? Did you have occasion to come in contact with Bailey Bell or Bob Parrish, Bill Sanders, those people?
I knew them all very well, and I've had cases with them. I can't remember whether they were personal injury cases or what. Because in those days, they handled other things besides personal injury cases. And I've been in cases with all of those that you've mentioned.
What were they like to practice against versus what you would have today? Ones that you come up against?
Well, they're probably much more informal, and I don't suppose that really means much except to say that maybe we've gotten more specialized now and we have more stringent rules to follow, and maybe the procedures have changed a little bit to where we're now more formal as then we were informal.
Has it made a change in the outcome of cases, do you think?
Oh, I don't know that it has had anything to do with the outcome of cases. I think that they were just as hard fought in those days as they are now.
Who would you say, when you first came to Anchorage in the first few years you were here, who would you consider the dean of the bar?
Dean? You mean by that sort of the leader of the bar? Well, I'd say probably John Manders, George Grigsby were probably two of the ones you might call the dean of the bar.
How, in what way were they dean?
Well, I think they'd both been here longer than anyone, for one thing, and they were older, for another thing.
Yeah.
It always seems to, yes, give them a little more credence. And they probably had been in practice a lot longer. A lot of the fellows when I first came up here had just been here a year or two. And so they sort of looked up to the ones that had been here a while. And Manders had a pretty well-established practice. George Grigsby didn't have that kind of a practice. He was mainly a criminal lawyer. So I think that's why people looked up to them.
What about people like Wendell Kay and Stan McCutcheon?
Well, yeah, Stan, as I remember him, was and he and Buell were together when I first knew them, they were just general practitioners. Stan McCutcheon was more involved in politics than he was in law, I think, at the time, although he always remained a lawyer. Buell was always he was a lawyer, he was always in private practice. He was also a bankruptcy judge at one time, a referee, I guess we call him those days. But they weren't, Stan McCutcheon, of course, had been here for years. I guess he was one of the oldest ones here, but he was not looked up so much as the dean of the bar as he was in politics. I mean, he was a politician more than anything. And Wendell Kay, of course, at the time was just sort of coming into his own, I guess, about that time. The rest of them, Harold Butcher and the rest of them, they were just general practitioners at the time.
Who would you consider the dean of the bar now?
I just have no idea who it would be. I wouldn't have any idea who to consider dean of the bar now. It's so large that you probably wouldn't be able to select one person as dean of the bar. If anybody, I'd say probably Wendell Kay. He's really the only one that's actually survived as long as the rest of them. Stan McCutcheon, of course, is no longer here. Buell is retired. I guess Wendell is pretty much retired, too, so there's hardly anyone left that's of that era.
The court bar fight, what do you see as the reasons for the bar fight? Why it came about?
Well, I really didn't have much to do with it, so I'm not very knowledgeable about anything that transpired. The only thing I remember about it is the animosity between some of the members, which really didn't lend much to the Bar Association at the time. It was just an unfortunate thing that happened, and I studiously stayed away from it as much as I could.
There are letters that were sent to clients saying, don't retain Harry Aaron because some of the decisions that he'd made earlier and things like that. Did you send those kind of letters out?
So, not that I recall.
Did you see them?
I don't remember seeing those letters.
Where was most of the animosity? Who were the key individuals?
Well, if I remember correctly, it was, I remember the vociferous ones being Roger Cremo was one, and Gene Wiles was one, and of course Buell Nesbitt on the other side. That's the three that George Boney was involved too. But George wasn't really that well thought of, I don't think, at the time. He was in with Burr, with Don Burr at the time, and I don't remember, but it seems like he was always involved, but not as strong as some of the others were that I just mentioned.
What about people like Butcher and Boyko?
Boyko was involved, as I remember. I don't think Butcher was that far involved into it.
Do you remember Ed Arnell?
Yes.
What was he like?
I don't remember him that well, but he was in practice when I came here, and he represented some of the old-time firms that Don Burr took over. He represented Alaska Sales and Service. And a few of the old-time business clients. He had quite a few business clients.
were the big business practitioners in the early, in the 1950s?
1950s? Well, it would have been Davis, Renfrew, and Hughes were the, they had quite a business clientele as well as insurance companies. John Manders had a lot of business clients. Ed Arnell, and I don't remember who he was with.
Plummer?
Yes, Plummer and Arnell, right, okay. Plummer and Arnell were, had a lot of business clients. I think Bell and Sanders were mainly involved in personal injury work, although other work as well. That's the primary ones I remember. Well, I don't think the fees were very high in those days. They were very low and probably more on retainer-type basis and per-document basis than they are nowadays.
For divorce, how much would that be?
I have no recollection what it was. It's probably a very, very small fee for a divorce in those days.
Was there a minimum?
No, I don't remember a minimum fee schedule. No, we did have one. We had a minimum fee schedule. I think, I don't remember when it was adopted, but I remember having one.
Do you know who would have been in charge of making it, putting it together?
I just don't remember.
Did you have any dealings with the Juno or Fairbanks line?
Not very much with Juno lawyers. I did a little bit with the Fairbanks lawyers.
Can you compare the Fairbanks bar with the Anchorage bar?
It was very similar to Anchorage bar at the time. They were probably a little more informal than we were. But they still are that way. They've never developed a strict followers of the rules we are anyway. So they're a bit more informal, and they have been.
Was it hard to bring a case up there and win as an Anchorage lawyer? Were they pretty parochial?
No. I don't ever remember them being that way. No, I think they were always fair, as I remember. Oh, we had cases that involved, one series of cases I had were involving a mortgage company out of Spokane, Washington, Metropolitan Mortgage and Securities Company. And I've had a personal injury case or two from up there. And I'm just trying to remember way back. Times I spent up there. Most of the time you were involved with a local client that had business in Fairbanks.
Were there lawyers that you worked with in Fairbanks?
No, I don't think I ever worked with anyone up there. Just knowing them and talking to them when they were there.
The transition time at statehood around 1960, what firms were developed around that time to cope with the new business that was going to be coming in at statehood? What do you consider the kind of statehood law firms, ones that were just formed at that time?
Were there law firms formed at that? I think they just sort of sprang, I mean, they just sort of grew and worked in towards the after statehood. I don't think there was any firm that just came in here on the spur of the moment because it was statehood, although I'm sure there was a lot of young attorneys that came up here right after statehood. And they all went into firms and into law practice. I don't think we really had any personal injury lawyers until after that, except for Bell Sanders and Tallman. Of course, Tallman was involved with it. I think the personal injury field developed substantially after statehood.
Which firms in the 1960s, or which people came and developed personal injury after statehood?
Well, I remember a fellow by the name of Bay Clark came up, and I think he must have come up right after statehood, or maybe even before. And his firm developed quite a reputation in personal injury work. Now you ask me a question I can't answer. I don't remember. It was Clark, and I can't remember the name of the lawyer that died and was in his firm. Maybe someone suggested it to you sometime. I don't know. It's hard to go back in memory and remember
the other practices that flourished after statehood rather than before.
Oh, I think it was just a general trend that everybody that came up here seemed to do well. We had a lot of lawyers that came here in the 60s who had done very well. The all the firms that are now in existence probably were an outgrowth of the 60s. I think probably the only one is Hughes Thorishness, although they certainly aren't the original ones. Davis and Renfrew were the originators of that. And Cliff Groh, I think, is the only other one that comes to mind at the moment. Dave Talbot is still in town, I understand, and I understand he's in practice. So, but he didn't practice law in those early days. He was in the United States Attorney's Office. But Rader and Groh and Hartley were the three that started about when I did. And the one left now would be Groh. I don't think Hartlieb and Rader, either one, are in law practice right now. And out of the Hughes firm, I don't think even John Hughes is any longer working. I think he's retired. So there aren't very many. I guess Russ Arnett would be one from way back. He was with Arnell, too, I believe, at one time.
Any remnants of the old practice of law?
Oh, I doubt it. They'll probably all just fade away.